genitalia of a great love. Oh, it will light up, it will show. Just believe.
Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely. Listening to that song is really amazing. I love that song by the Supremes. Don't you hear the wind blowing? Changes at hand. If you're young at heart, rise up and take your stand. Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. Our guest today, published author and writer, humorist, grandmother, Debbie Carroll, is sensing the wind's gusts and the change that's at hand and is taking a stand, having written an excellent article published in the Huffington Post titled, Why 60 is So Not the New 40. From Grand Magazine, Huffington Post byliner Debbie Carroll is our guest today on the Not Old Better Show. Debbie Carroll, so nice to be talking with you. I have read your articles. I know of your work with Grand Magazine. The winds are certainly changing with respect to 60-year-olds, but I need to ask you too, just, you know, kind of point blank, this whole thing really kind of began with a Facebook post, apparently. And so what was your thought when you found the Facebook post wishing one newly turned 60-year-old Facebooker a happy birthday with the statement, remember, 60 is the new 40? What was your reaction?
Well, my reaction was like hell. Oh, am I allowed to say like hell?
You can say worse.
No, 60 is not the new 40. It shouldn't be, and nobody should be insisting that it is, because 60 is better than 40 was. I loved 40, don't get me wrong, but I don't want to go back there. There's a real advantage to being 60. So, no, that's not a good birthday wish.
Yeah, I'll be 60 in May of 2017, and here we are. Right in January of early 2017, so a few months away. But I'm not so old or feeble-minded and doddering that I'm unable to remember age 40. And going back to 40 just has no appeal to me. And that is your point in this.
Exactly. I mean, I remember 40. I believe I remember it. And it was fun, too. But it was a stage of life that was really hard. I was raising kids. I was working. I was, you know, still in at that point in maybe a 20-year marriage. It is now a 40-year marriage. It was all hard. My parents were still alive. It was a difficult time and a fun time. But there is a joy to being 60. As I hope there will be, I'm hoping for a similar, you know, or at least something like joy when I'm 70. I don't want to look back and wish I was in an earlier time. I don't think it's a healthy attitude.
Well, from a perspective of contentment, that's kind of how I read the article, certainly. You offer this great list of things learned by the newly 60 to those, you know, really who kind of see the grass as always greener, maybe, or maybe they see it as less gray. But tell us a little bit about that list and maybe walk us through, some of the most important items there for us to kind of...
Sure, I'd be happy to, because sharing the wisdom is one of the good things about being 60. Sometimes people have to listen to you just because you're older than they are, and they think, you know, you're worthy of respect. Until I start talking, and then they know there's nothing respectable here. But I think the most important thing, first of all, this is all predicated on your health. If you feel good, if you're over 60 and you feel good, that makes everything easier. If you don't feel particularly healthy, then you got to do something about that. So all of this is predicated on you physically feel pretty good, which fortunately for me, I do. And I work at it so that I don't have to give that up anytime soon. So having said that, once you feel good, one of the things that I learned, which took me a long time to learn, is that you do make your own luck. You know, it's not, your whole life cannot be, oh, I was unlucky, I didn't get the breaks. Sometimes you must go out and do that for yourself. It takes a little bit of guts. You know, you have to be willing to make change. People are so afraid of change. So I always walk myself through, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen if I try this? And generally, another one of the things that I've learned is the worst that can happen almost never does. And we spend a lot of time worrying about, you know, OMG, this might happen. It never does, or almost never. So give it a try. What's the worst that could happen if you fail at something? When I was 40, I was a lot more afraid to try new things and make vast changes in my life. I had, you know, a lot of things, a lot of responsibilities, kids, my husband, my friends. Now I realize you must do that. You must be willing to make your own luck. The main other thing I've learned, and again, this is predicated on having enough money to live comfortably. You don't have to be wealthy, but, you know, if you have food, clothing, and shelter, and you're covered, and you're warm, and you're fed, if you have enough money to cover a few annoyances of life, then it's not a problem if it's something you can solve with money and if you have enough money to solve it. So the example I used in my column, and there are many, is, you know, some people will flip out if they get a traffic ticket that's $175. And yes, that's a lot of money. I am the cheapest person I know, and $175, I could buy, you know, an entire wardrobe and eat for 2 months on that kind of money. But if I have $175, then I'm not going to be annoyed about getting that ticket. I'm not going to beat myself up. If you have the money to solve the problem, and if it is a problem that can be solved with money, that's not a problem. It's just an annoyance. And being able to differentiate between things that are annoying and actual problems came to me at around 60. So that's another good one. The other thing that I think about a lot is, I'm not trying to be anything anymore. You know, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be like? I don't have to be anything anymore. I can just be. I can just be whatever the hell it is I am right now. And that's okay. And I'm no longer trying to get my kids to be anything. Not that that was ever a good thing to be doing anyway. But they're who they are. They're in their 30s. They're actually wonderful humans. But I'm no longer worried about, you know, the college they're going to go to, or the person they're going to connect with. So I'm free of having to be anything, and I'm free of having to worry about, you know, who my kids are going to be, which I loved. This is a new one for me. This only happened in the last year or so. I don't have to hang out with people I really am not crazy about anymore. I don't do social obligation the way I once did. And that's a big thing. You know, as you get older and you kind of go, ooh, my time, not that I'm old, but my time might be limited. I really don't have time to suffer fools anymore. And I don't have to. When I was 40, I still had to hang out with people that, you know, might have made me a little nauseous. But now I don't have to. I can spend my very precious and possibly limited time with people who make me laugh, or make me elevate me in some way, or people with whom I can be very comfortably me. So all of those things didn't happen when I was 40. And a big one, and maybe the biggest of all, when you're 60, I think you're not so hard on yourself. You know, you're not smacking yourself in the head nearly as often. You do learn the power of forgiveness. It's one thing you learn maybe how to forgive others, but more importantly, self-loathing definitely goes down with age. And that's, I believe, quite important. You know, if I do a stupid thing, I still hate myself for like 10 seconds, but I used to hate myself for 2 weeks if I did stupid things. So that's an improvement. So all of those things, you know, that's the best thing about getting older, all of them.
Yeah, and it's almost as though there is this tolerance that is expressed that I really found very powerful and very positive. I also really got the sense, too, that it's almost an approach to life that is a little live and let live, that you're free to be who you are. You're free to pursue what you want to pursue, whether that's work or whether that's some travel or some other form of hobby, exploration, or otherwise.
Exactly. And well, for me, I have absolutely no artistic talent whatsoever. But this year I took up mosaics just because I wanted to, and I didn't care that they're hideously ugly. And my four-year-old grandson thinks they're fabulous. but I know they're terrible. And I used to take that kind of thing seriously. So yeah, I'm not afraid of failure at things, because really, who cares? What's the difference if I am not very good at what I try to do, if it makes me happy? And I also find that I'm not as afraid of going out into the world and foisting myself on others. You know, my whole writing thing is new for me. I've always been a writer, but I've never sort of put it out there. I used to do a lot of public speaking, and that was a pretty scary thing. And then I just said, you know, I'm just going to go out there and be who I am. That got easier as I got older. And I'm also more willing to give of my time. Because I have more time to give, I am more willing to volunteer at things that I used to say, oh, you know, I don't really have time to make a weekly commitment to something. So it is very freeing, and it enables me to be a better at being me and better at being a person in the world. I think I might be nicer than I used to be. I'm not sure about that. You'd have to ask people that hate my guts, but I really do think it's enabled me to be a nicer person. I don't take myself as seriously, and therefore I don't take others as seriously either. Maybe that's good and bad, but the best thing about being over 60 for me is it's been very liberating.
I just think you're a wonderful writer. I have found a lot of your written material. We're going to put links up to that writing on our blog and websites, absolutely. And kind of getting back to what you said just a moment ago about your grandson and your mosaics, I think that's wonderful that there's a lot of appreciation. There's maybe not as much appreciation from writers who write children's books and then don't get this grandparenting, who suddenly are showing an outdated version of who we are at 60, that we're perhaps knitting or gardening, or maybe we're not working at all, paid or volunteer. Those are almost common stereotypes that you see in movies, commercials, and television. So how is that going to change?
Well, it's going to change slowly, but soon, if I have anything to say about it. It was interesting. Because, you know, I had been a teacher, and I've always loved children's books, and I've read them for years. I never found too much offensive about them until my grandson was born, and I went looking for books. He's very fortunate. He has four grandparents, and he loves them all. And I was looking for books that were stories about, you know, kids and their grandparents. Well, in every one, not that there's anything wrong with this, but the grandmothers in particular always had white hair in a bun. I've got a lot of friends over 50. I've never seen one of my friends have white hair in a bun just yet. And they're always overweight. They're always wearing these like dirndl skirts that are, you know, the size of Montana. They're always a little stooped over. They don't, I run 5 miles. I run it slowly. It takes me about a week and a half, but I run 5 miles several times a week, truly. My friends play tennis. They're very adventurous. They do biking trips. They go climbing. None of this exists in children's books. The grandmothers knit, which is fine. I have no, you know, I have 10 thumbs. I don't knit, but I admire those who do. Not that there's anything wrong with that. They knit, they bake pies. Also, I'm a baker. Nothing wrong with that. Nope, but that's all they do. And the grandfathers, they have comb-overs. Not one of my male friends has a comb-over. They also don't have hair. But they do not have comb-overs. They're always mysteriously red-faced. Again, always overweight. The most active thing they do is put a worm on a line to fish. This is what we're seeing in kids' books. And I'm looking around at my friends and saying, I don't know who these people are looking at. My grand friends are vibrant people. A lot of them still work. They wish they didn't, but they do. Some are retired. The ones who are retired are active and vivacious. in the books, they're doddering, they're confused. And I thought, okay, this is just wrong. So I did write a children's book about real grandparents, and it started out with me collecting. I asked my friends and cyber friends to send me photos of what they look like now or activities of them with their grandkids. And nobody looked. I mean, I got pictures of grandparents all dressed in leather on their motorcycles. I got kayaking grandparents, tennis playing grandparents, grandparents at work in their offices and retail establishments, lawyers in court. Nobody in real life looked anything like the grandparents in the book. So I did do a book about real grandparents, but it's slow. It's a slow change. And it's not just children's books. I think it's media. You know, if you Google stock images of grandparents, which I did because I was curious, not that there's anything wrong with white hair. I color my hair. It's brown. Most of the women friends that I have over 60 color their hair. Some have gone natural white. They're both beautiful. But if you Google stock images of the word grandparents, they all look, I feel, 25 years older than most of my friends look. So we do have to do something. I mean, we did have two grandparents running for president this year, and say what you will about either of them. If you can be the president of the United States and you can be a grandparent, then that should say something about the aspect of getting older. You don't just fold up into a ball and, you know, curl up into a ball and just hide in a corner. This was our first presidential election ever where we had, you know, a grandmother and a grandfather vying for that office. It's pretty astounding. And neither one of them looks like they should be, you know, checking into an old age home, pardon the expression. So, yeah, we have to do something about it. And what you're doing is great. You know, your podcast sort of, we're getting better. I think in many ways we are, but it hasn't caught on to the stereotypes of the media yet.
It's almost as though we need to be as emphatic about, you know, remember 60 is the not 40. Well, it's not 90 either. And
oh, that's a great way of putting it, Paul. You're like a genius.
Well, thanks. It's talking to you, Debbie. And we are with Debbie Carroll. Debbie has written a wonderful Huffington Post article that we will link to. But I have to say, on the other hand, there are lots of groups that are depicted maybe in some, you know, misrepresented ways. And so we kind of need to almost pick our battles with some of this. But I think there's an important statement to make that we're healthy and vital. And that's really what you're out to remind
me. It is interesting, Paul. I know you know that I work with Grand Magazine now. Mm-hmm. And our current cover is Magic Johnson. And I couldn't believe he was a grandfather, but he is. And the whole sort of mission of Grand, they found me on Huffington Post as well, which is how I hooked up with them. And the whole mission of Grand is sort of to disrupt the image of grandparents. So we're trying to change that too, because, you know, I'm calling companies and telling them about Grand and saying, you know, we exercise, we travel, we play, we learn. And we are, you and I and our generation, we are disrupting the image of being older in a good way. And we just have to be really vocal about it. And I don't know if I could do a free commercial. Grand is a free publication. So anyone who is interested in that can go to grandsub.com, and it's a free subscription. And if you're interested in aging with grace with us, then that's what we're into there. But it is fascinating, the stereotype of aging, and some of us do add to it. You know, we do like to complain about our aches and our pains, but really I think we need to pay more attention to telling people how great some aspects of aging are, and God knows it beats the alternative.
I appreciate the link that you just gave. We will put a link up to the Grand Magazine subscription offer, and
but it's free now, so that's
okay.
Good time.
Great, good to point out. Yeah, I thought that interview with Cookie Johnson was fascinating too. A great cover story. So finally, Debbie, what are we going to be saying about the new 70?
That's a good question. I hope I'm saying that it's a lot like 60, but maybe with a bit more grace I'm not the most graceful person. Maybe I'll be. I'm hoping for a little more of all the good stuff. I want to be a little more forgiving. I want to be less quick to be annoyed. So I'm hoping it's, you know, sort of a groovier, mellower, like going back to my hippie days. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I'm hoping for that too. I'm also hoping for more of your humor. It is wonderful. And I'm hoping that you'll come back and share some of that humor with us, because I think this is going to be interesting to follow. Grandparents doing lots of interesting new things. And I hope, Debbie Carey, you'll be willing to come back and share some of those with us.
I absolutely will. And I do think the main thing that you must maintain, which I said to you earlier, is your sense of humor. It changes everything.
Yes. Good. Again, thank you so much, Debbie Carroll, for your time. Happy New Year to you. We're going to...
Happy New Year. Thank you for having me, Paul. It was fun.
Good. Well, thanks, Debbie. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. Bye now.
Bye. Oh, gosh. Having Debbie here has been wonderful. My thanks again to humorist Debbie Carroll. She is hilarious, and we'll definitely invite her back. Check out her books, articles, and work at Grand Magazine. As usual, we'll post links to everything. And my thanks to you, my listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable. I'm grateful you're spending some of it with me. I'm always interested in feedback, and you can leave that at iTunes and Google Play, or send me an email at info@notoldbetter.com. And you can find me at Voxer at notoldbetter, where you can easily leave me a voice text, which, with your permission, I can play here on the show. Well, stay tuned for part two of our interview with ultra runner Mark Cligott, which we'll post this Friday. That's January 6th, 2017, when you'll hear Mark describe in detail races and runners he's been inspired by. You won't want to miss part two. Remember, contact information for feedback and ideas, info@notoldbetter.com. That's info@notoldbetter.com. Of course, find me on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, and notoldbetter.com. Happy New Year to everyone. Thanks again.